is a real man for all seasons, which is exactly what we need in these times that we're living in here. He, at one time, he was a roving editor for the Reader's Digest, if you can believe that. Now, of course, he writes for WorldNet Daily, other things. He's very prolific. He is extremely interesting and entertaining. Radio show host, does a little bit of everything. Lowell Ponte, we are very happy to have him on. Lowell, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Daniel, always a pleasure to be with you.
The biggest story, our last guest talked about the Me Too movement and Brett Kavanaugh and what have you. You have an article recent on WorldNet Daily about this. This seems to be one of the biggest stories in the world, certainly in America. Let's start with your new article on Brett Kavanaugh. What is it important that we are watching right before us, this train wreck?
Well, one thing we're watching is absolute confirmation that rape is involved in this story. That is, the Democratic Party, its willing accomplice, Christine Blasey Ford, and its leftist comrades in the national media have been raping Brett Kavanaugh. There's no doubt about that. When you realize that the main accusations against him have been as follows, someone touched my body, says Miss Blasey Ford, but I don't remember the year. I don't remember the month. I don't remember the building it happened in. It's just all kind of hazy to me. But on this basis, I demand that the FBI investigate. Investigate what? There's nothing specific there at all. It's beyond the jurisdiction or purview of the FBI anyway. Its statute of limitations normally would have all run out, even if you can legally hold such a trial in Baltimore. She never filed criminal charges in Baltimore, so it would be absurd 36 years later to invoke them. Only 6 years ago, after Brett Kavanaugh's name had been mentioned by Mitt Romney when he was running for president, did she suddenly realize that she had a vague memory of four nameless men, and now one of them had come into focus for her, and it was Brett Kavanaugh. But she now wants a special hearing for herself in which he must testify first. Even though she's the accuser and has not made clear her accusations, he is to testify first. She is to be able to control exactly who can ask questions and who among the press can come there. And surprisingly enough, she wants only the left-wing press to cover this hearing, not the right-wing press or any balance. In other words, I can go down a list of the oddities of what she's demanding, but what it all comes down to is what Kavanaugh himself said, namely, this is Brave New World. This is 1984 here already, or as I said, this is Alice in Wonderland. You know, first the conviction, then the trial. And we've had many Democrats more than eager to go along with a procedure whereby a letter from this Kavanaugh was apparently in the hands of Dianne Feinstein for the last 6 weeks. So before there was any Kavanaugh hearing, before there was any chance for an investigation into him, when Dianne Feinstein was still talking privately with Mr. Kavanaugh, and she, of course, is a very liberal senator who just was denied the nomination of her own party in convention in California because she wasn't far enough to the left. But now she suddenly, with only hours to go before Kavanaugh was to be approved by a vote, she brings out this letter from nowhere and then refuses to turn the letter over until last Monday to any Republican on the committee and insists that everything be stopped. Everything be stopped so that an indefinite hearing can be heard into this. Now, understand, we're coming up on an election, and the election may turn the Senate over from Republicans to Democrats, and all they want to do is stall. All they want to do is slow down the process and object loudly when anyone tries to keep the process on track. So, this is what we have, a strange, vague accusation by an accuser who's done everything she can. Oh, yes, she also, among other things, has been very slow to turn over evidence. She has refused so far to turn over evidence from her therapist, who helped her recover her memory only 6 years old of what happened 36 years ago. We don't know, but in most recovered memory cases, scientists will tell you, there are defects. In fact, there can be completely false memories created, just as can be done with hypnosis. And that may have been the case. We don't know. She has also refused to turn over the results of what she calls her lie detector test. She claims to have passed the lie detector test, but only a few minor problems with that. Number one, I could teach you in 5 minutes how to falsify a lie detector test. Easiest thing in the world to do. And all the more so because this was not a screened real FBI-type lie detector test. This was a test done by someone she chose and paid for by her. So it's her own private. Get the results I want, the way a newspaper gets the results it wants when it conducts a poll kind of test. In other words, this is the reason why no court in the country accepts a lie detector test as evidence. There's just too much room for falsification in them. And that is why, even at that, she will not turn over details of that test. Or she's been doing so very, very slowly. Again, delay in the process. In the meanwhile, what have we found going on around us? Well, number one, Ms. Blasey Ford has opened up a GoFundMe page for herself. As of Friday night, the GoFundMe page had been posted for only 3 days, but had yielded $209,987 in donations. In other words, about $70,000 a day, money coming into her. Now, Jonathan Turley, law professor at George Washington University in Washington, has said these are very suspect things, because when a witness puts himself or herself on a GoFundMe page, they're basically putting themselves up for bid. And if they can get more money by being a little more extreme, a little more ideological, and so on, they're usually quite happy to do so. It's a definite mercenary incentive to amp up their testimony, and that's exactly what Christine Blasey has done in this instance. Now, in addition to that, should we believe the other witnesses that have now begun coming forth? Well, one of them says, the second witness, says she was drunk at the time of a party where she says she witnessed something, so drunk that her memory was impaired, that she was falling down, that her eyesight was distorted, but she expects to be believed without question by Democrats on the committee, and several seem more than willing to do so. Number three, porn king Larry Flint is just one of many leftists who, in this case, has offered $10 million to anyone who helps impeach Trump. I bring that up because James Carville, a hitman for Bill Clinton, you'll remember, against Paula Jones, once said, if you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park, who knows what you'll get? Well, what happens when you drag $10 million through that trailer park? How many false witnesses are you able to get when they know they're not going to be held to any strict standard and they're going to be backed at whatever they say by the left-wing media? And by the way, the media itself is backed by people like Mazie Hirono, senator from Hawaii, who says that men should simply shut up. Men should not even talk in this process. And that Republicans on the committee must be the only ones to ask her questions, so she will be a young woman, relatively, questioned by old men. And that will be the image the media gets to show to the nation, rather than the female lawyer that the committee has hired to question Ms. Blasey Ford.
How do you think this is going to go?
Going on here. By the way, as to the larger question, why do Democrats care about this? I know we'll get later into what the New World Order and Mr. Trump speaking to the UN this week is all about. But a few days ago, California Governor Jerry Brown said that President Trump will undermine, quote, this world, the world order, if we don't get rid of him, closed quote. Think about that. And you immediately begin to see where the political divide has come. I mean, the Democratic Party and Republican Party used to be two moderate, centrist political parties that could negotiate with each other, that could come to some vague idea of what serves the national interest, and so on. That has now all changed. The Democratic Party has basically been hijacked by a group of radical extremists who are globalists. And what does it mean to be a globalist? It means, as Barack Obama says, they think of themselves as citizens of the world. That was what Mr. Obama said. I found myself asking at the time, where in the Constitution does it say that a citizen of the world is qualified to run for president of the United States? As far as I know, it isn't. But their entire orientation is they want to see the United States and all other nation states just washed away, the way the European nation wants all of the European nations within it erased from the world map, replaced by a massive centralized governance, global or near global. And because
Let me go back on. We got about a little over a minute and a half or so before the break. Let's go back on this situation. I am shocked that I'm seeing Democratic senators, what have you. I asked the last guest this too. I'll ask you. It's like they're reading off a script and they're saying Brett Kavanaugh must defend this charge, these charges, and must prove his innocence. And yes, and what planet can you prove a negative? How in the world are you going to prove a negative and do it by Thursday? Prove a negative and do it by Thursday.
Yeah,
how do you do that?
What that means in logical terms is prove that there are no white crows on the planet. Oh, you can't? Well, that's too bad. You're now guilty of witchcraft. But that's what it amounts to. You're right. So Brett Kavanaugh is expected not only to prove his innocence, but to do so without even having heard the charges against him. He is supposed to testify first in this procedure by her charges coming from a woman whose memory is at best very, very cloudy. I don't know if anyone want a world where that kind of justice prevails, but of course this is all justified because they say Brett Kavanaugh would take away a woman's right to abortion. This is a major objection by Mazie Hirono, the senator from Hawaii. The problem is twofold. Number one, surely Mazie Hirono realizes that if you allow wide-open abortion paid for by the taxpayer, most of the babies aborted are going to be female. Don't call that a feminist point of view. That's an anti-woman point of view. Unless, of course, you want all women. It's eradicated from the planet, but that will be the result.
I've already discussed the show. We've already discussed more from a woman who says she's afraid to fly. That's one of her reasons that she uses. And her dog ate her homework. That's the other resisting to testify. We spent a lot of time on this. A couple follow-up questions I think are important. One, Lowell, what is the end game here? And two, why do the Republicans on these committees, it's so obvious this is so political and so whatever, why do they let the Democrats get away with this? Is America that stupid? Or the Republican Party that stupid? What?
Well, basically, yes. The New York Times, just a day or so ago, Brian Fallon, one of the chief operatives for Hillary Clinton, top former spokesman for her, said the entire purpose of this exercise is not morality. In fact, probably Judge Kavanaugh is one of the most moral people sexually ever to seek office in the United States. Rather, the issue is how do we stop Donald Trump from appointing anyone to the Supreme Court? And we do it by delay. In fact, Fox News host Tucker Carlson only Friday ago explained under the U.S. Senate's arcane rules, if Republicans do go along with having a hearing on Thursday, as they have, then the clock would run out potentially and Kavanaugh's nomination process will end before the vote on his confirmation a week later could be taken. They would simply end it procedurally, and Republicans seem not to pay any attention to that. Maybe they feel they have a way around it. But Democrats would like to just bring forth one woman after another. It doesn't matter whether they're bought and paid for to give testimony. As long as it delays, as long as there is an endless slowdown of the process, that will achieve the Democrats' end of dragging things to the November midterms. After all, we're virtually in October now. So as to the Republican side and what they're doing, I have asked myself that at great length. I mean, I was born and raised a Republican. I worked in the Republican side of the legislature in Sacramento and California. I have been a conservative journalist in Washington, D.C. I've seen how just pathetic government is. First, you have to remember, government is made up of people who love power and glory. And that's true of both sides. You do not find a whole lot of people who are highly virtuous. Number two, the parties don't really know who they are. The Democrats right now are, for example, discovering that their base is far to the left of most of their politicians. And so the politicians are running frantically to keep up with the base, to move farther and farther to the left. Republicans, remember, used to be the progressive party in America. You go back 100 years or so, and the Republicans were the party of big centralized government in Washington. It was Abraham Lincoln who gave us the first military conscription, which said that the bodies of everyone are the property of the government. It was the Republican Party who gave us the first income tax. It was the Republicans who gave us the first totally fraudulent paper money in the country called greenbacks, a paper money so worthless they were paying our troops with that the government itself would not accept greenbacks in payment of taxes. Think about that. And so the Republican Party has found it very hard to follow the lead of Barry Goldwater and Ronald Reagan and now Donald Trump in moving away from the old progressive direction. The other thing is, in the wake of Franklin Roosevelt, Republicans have been scared to death by Democrats. They have gone along with the assumption that the Democrats really represent the majority, whether they do or not. And therefore, Republicans are always trying to play Democrat light. Or as Newt Gingrich once said of Bob Dole, he's just a tax collector for the welfare state. He's offering you the welfare state, the Democrat style of government, only 5 or 10% cheaper. And therefore you're supposed to be grateful. But they both lead to the same destination. They're both going to take America off a cliff, one at 65 miles an hour, the other at 50 miles an hour. But they'll both destroy America as a capitalist country. And of course, since World War II, we've seen both parties become basically globalist, believe that all differences end at the water's edge, that we are all supposed to follow a world policy and share the United Nations, and so on. Well, in fact, that's quite contrary to the nationalism that Donald Trump is offering. Donald Trump, like many European nations, like the British did in their vote for Brexit to leave the European Union, are saying, no, we'd rather be a nation in charge of our own country than have all our rules decided. You know, the British woke up one day in June 2016 and realized that 63% of all their laws and regulations were not coming from people they'd voted for. They were coming from unelected bureaucrats in Brussels with the European Union. And those Brussels bureaucrats had handed down doctrine that England could no longer control its own immigration policy. That if someone was welcomed to Germany as an immigrant, as millions of us Muslims have been in recent years, they then have every right to pick up and move to England. England does not have any right to control their coming. And once they arrive in England, they can say, oh, I didn't find a job I liked, therefore I'm going on welfare.
Thought.
And they're entitled to stay on
Hold
welfare.
That thought. Getting back to Lowell. Lowell, just quickly, I don't want to spend any more time on this charade. Supposedly they're going to have a vote on Friday. Is Kavanaugh going to get nominated, yes or no?
You mean confirmed? Oh, I would hope.
I mean confirmed, yes. Confirmed,
I mean,
sorry.
Republicans have a choice. They can, of course. See, the problem I'm dealing with is that the Republican Party is now schizophrenic. There are a lot of people who still think of themselves as progressive Republicans of the globalist variety. They would rather have a one-world government. They would rather have the U.S. asserting heavy military power around the planet. In other words, they're basically liberals, only they don't know it. And, of course, the Democrats are no longer liberals. They're no longer really Democrats. They would like to see democracy crushed any way they can because the people are inclined to vote against them. So, therefore, we've seen a total transformation underway of both political parties. Now, what will that lead to with Kavanaugh? We don't know, but it doesn't take very many Republicans turning against him. It might be Jeff Flake, who spent his time as a U.S. senator from Arizona being not a Republican, but being someone who went down to Cuba and virtually licked the dust off Fidel Castro's boots, and who then found when he came home that if he ran for re-election, he'd lose by 40%. In the race against a real Republican. So he now is very angry, and he is going to have to content himself with the eternal glory of being a pundit on MSNBC or Marxist Socialist NBC. So he might actually benefit himself from his point of view by voting against Kavanaugh. And that would take it down, of course, to our vice president and what vote he would cast in an election. That would be an interesting contest. Of course, many Democrats would like to see Mike Pence removed from office, too, because to remove just Trump is to leave Republican power intact. They would like to see some gimmick whereby, for example, the Supreme Court stepping in and asserting the power to remove an illegitimately elected president. This has been advocated by Robert Reich, the Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton and others. And if they could do that, then we could have a surprise president, a president from Baltimore, Maryland. We could have President Nancy Pelosi, because the third person in the line of succession would be the Speaker of the House, and by then the Democrats could control the House. There's a thought for
you. Yeah, that'll keep you up at night. That's not going to happen. Let's just not even go there. You talked about the globalists. You talked quite a bit about them. You've written about them pretty sharply. Trump went into basically the belly of the beast this week to the United Nations and gave a speech. What were your reactions to that?
Oh, I was delighted. I mean, he said basically the United States is still a nation. We assert our nationhood. We're not trying to become part of a global imperium of some kind. And therefore, we are going to make America great again and let you people out there in the world make yourselves great again if you can, too. But we're not going to give in to being ruled by a world court or being ruled by votes of the United Nations or the like, most of which simply being little dictators all over the world have a vote equal to ours in the UN General Assembly. And that's not really a direction designed for health or sanity in the future of the world.
The Iran deal, what is left of this? It's all boiled down very confusing. Europe supposedly continues to want the Iran deal. Trump has threatened to pull out of it. What are we looking at with the Iran deal? What is left here? What is important to know?
Well, Europeans have gone in and snapped up many of the contracts for airliners and so on that had gone to Boeing and American companies. And they would love to keep that if they could. Europe, after all, is a rather cynical place after thousands of years from the Roman Empire on. And they're capable of doing almost anything. In addition, economically, they are ruled by Germany. And Germany doesn't really like the United States. And you can't blame Germany too much for that. They were defeated in two world wars, largely through American influence. So they believe they would be ruling Europe entirely right now, were it not for that. Now, their third attempt to take control of Europe was the implementation of the European Union and that currency called the euro, which is really the Deutschmark in disguise. So Germany has been trying to conquer Europe a third time starting in 1999, and American influence has largely thwarted that as well. We've encouraged nationalism, and we have countries like France, headed by Mr. Macron. Mr. Macron has, by the way, admitted that if the people of France were allowed a plebiscite, if they were allowed to vote on whether to stay in the European Union or not, they would probably leave the European Union too. That's why he is not giving them a vote. And that's the whole point of the EU, is to do away with democracy. In fact, in the book, in Craig Smith's and my most recent book, you see him about once a week on with Neil Cavuto on Fox Business. We go into a bit of the interesting history of the European Union. It was originally created and conceived of by a fellow named Jean Monnet, a French intellectual after World War II, who envisioned putting together a European order. And as they were voting on Brexit, a British author, Frederick Forsyth, who also wrote Day of the Jackal, The Odessa File, and other such books, but as a journalist, he looked into Monet's basically confidential notebooks. And in them, he found a lot of interesting observation. For example, he found Monet writing, Europe's nation should be guided towards the superstate, now called the European Union, without their people understanding what is happening. This can be accomplished by successive steps, each disguised as having an economic purpose, but which will eventually and irreversibly lead to federation. In other words, turning of nation of Europe away from nations like France and Germany and England and so on into one super state called the European Union, which will have its own army, which will have its own economic base, which will stand as a superpower in its own right against the United States, and which will have enough military might to crush any nation that tries to leave. So it's a rather ugly thing, and it's, of course, like much of the globalist movement, designed to be anti-democratic, the same way the Democratic Party is now, which led me a few weeks ago in a column at WorldNet Daily to ask the question, under our truth in advertising laws and so on, how could we allow the Democratic Party to continue to call itself the Democratic Party when almost everything it does is anti-democratic? It's trying to run the United States, not by elections, but by the unelected state, by bureaucrats, by unelected judges, by unelected reporters, and so on. And to crush the elected people.
Lowell, could you please, Lowell, back off your phone just a hair when you talk. You're bursting a little bit. You're a little too close to the phone. Just back off just a hair, and that'll get rid of some of the bursting.
Okay.
You were talking, the EU, what we're looking at, Donald Trump obviously represents, at least on the surface, a sea change. What do you think the future is going to hold? Obviously, America was set up to deindustrialize, to be morphed into, swallowed into this globalist hole, whatever this is. Now it looks like we're stabilizing and trying to pull out of that. What is the future going to hold? Are we going to be able to do that in this whole, with the whole world looking at us and really needing us and wanting us?
Well, he's going to have to make at least the Republican Party over more in his own image if he's to succeed, for a simple reason. Donald Trump is only good for another, what, 6.5 years or thereabouts as president. I mean, he's already halfway through his first of two terms. And as such, he can't last forever. And when he goes, is there anyone else charismatic enough and strongly enough based in his own personality, tolerable or not, that he could simply defy the rest of the world? There's a certain advantage to being a billionaire, for example. You can't be easily bought and sold by somebody else. Is there anyone else on the Republican horizon who could take Donald Trump's place? I don't see such a person.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Well, we don't know. We don't know what the future is, and things are changing by the day. I want to go back towards the Constitution. That's what I want. That's what I'm concerned about, and I'm really excited about those ways in which we have. On the other side, one more segment with Lowell Ponte and his book. We'll talk about his new book. He's written with Craig Smith. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Power Hour. As you can tell, Lowell can talk about a variety of subjects and do it very well, very provocatively. His new book called Money, Morality, and the Machine is available, and he has an older book, The Future Looks Like Baltimore. Talk about a provocative title. You can check those out wherever books are sold. In the last segment here, you know, it seems like every generation, Lowell, seems to repeat the same things. I don't know if they're not teaching history in school anymore or what, but about a lifetime it takes to get rid of people who are for socialism. Down in south of the border, Venezuela, supposedly this socialist utopia that has really all advantages you could want for a socialist country. The oil reserves it has, a huge base to be able to trade with, to be able to do whatever, but yet now they can't even feed the people, and lines for gas are 5 days long. What do we need to know and learn about Venezuela?
Well, to begin with, Karl Marx taught the idea that there must be a phase of capitalism before you can even attempt communism, because capitalism is a productive system. It will build up wealth, and then you will have wealth to redistribute when you go to the redistributive system of socialism. But one thing Marx did not ever have a good answer for is, okay, what happens when everything gets redistributed? And everybody, every guinea pig is standing there with his hands out saying, give me more. And the answer at that point has always been, you have to impose a dictatorship, and tell people you will now go spend the rest of your life working in the sugar cane field or in the coal mine or whatever, and if you don't, we'll shoot you because we need the money. You notice that in Venezuela just a few days ago, Mr. Maduro made a display of eating a large, sumptuous meal in a foreign restaurant, while at home his people are starving, literally. The average Venezuelan has lost more than 20 pounds weight. Many children are starving in the streets because the government has simply, well, to begin with, they turned everything over to totally incompetent people to run their oil and other industries. Now, those people have just made a mess of everything. That is typical when you're judged not by your skill at business, but by your skill at politics. That winds up being a rather bad standard for running companies. Everybody gets number 12 badly made shoes. And the slogan of the people, as it was in the Soviet Union, becomes, they pretend to pay us and we pretend to work. So it's just another form of slavery or serfdom. That basically is one of the little secrets of how socialism, that selling socialism here doesn't tell people they're not a progressive philosophy. They're a regressive reactionary philosophy that wants to take us back to feudalism. And why they love feudalism, as Eric Hoffer, the longshoreman philosopher, pointed out, is that was the last time that the intellectual class was part of the ruling class in society. Intellectuals are usually paid what they're worth, which normally isn't that much. And I speak as an intellectual. But in Venezuela, they've had the problem that they've squandered all the money, that President Hugo Chavez's daughter, who's now about 30, 35, is worth $4.2 billion, money that she has stashed, like the average Latin American dictator, in banks in New York and Europe. And so the country has been impoverished. It's being held in place by 14,000 Cuban secret police who oppress the people and who shoot down serious enemies of the regime. People are fleeing the country by the millions. The money is inflating at more than 1,000,000% this year. It has hyperinflation as Germany did in 1923. If you had one gold coin, you could buy a rather sumptuous house in Venezuela today. But who would want a house in Venezuela? That's the challenge. So they've made a mess of the country, as socialism always does, because it's just contrary to human nature. And I speak as someone whose ancestors were utopian socialist communards of the Icarian variety. They came to the U.S. Mississippi Basin in 1848 from France to create a heaven on earth. And that's what socialism promises people. Forget the Bible. Forget getting your heaven from a God who believes in you as an individual. Rather, you can make your own heaven on earth with a big enough government and a big enough elite of super smart people who can tell you what to do. And we will all share equally, and everything will be wonderful. The problem is, historically, that never works out. You wind up with a Soviet Union, a nomenclatura. Yes?
We got a couple of minutes. We got about 3 minutes before the end of the interview.
Oh.
What do you make of our educational system? Because I am so, you know, these public schools, government schools is what they are. They teach government. That's what they're teaching. They are raising a generation of socialists. What do you make of this?
The country is committing suicide, basically. I think the first thing we should do is stop donating to public universities that have heavy active socialism on the campus. And basically, we should tell employers, here are the most socialist campuses in America. Stop hiring people who graduate from these places because they are like rattlesnakes. You know, you do not want them in your company. And if you totally devalued the degrees those schools are offering, then you would have a very different environment. By the way, we go into this at great length in Money, Morality, and the Machine. And if people would like an absolutely free copy, I remind you, you can get one postpaid, won't cost you a thing for the holidays, by calling 800-630-1492, like the year Columbus sailed the ocean blue. That's 800-630-1492. I apologize if I'm repetitive. But yes, we need to understand that socialism is a very destructive and unworkable philosophy that people seem to like because they've seen capitalism that doesn't appear to work. Donald Trump is reversing that. He is creating a capitalism that does work, but it doesn't appeal to people's impulse not to work. And a great many people would prefer to think of themselves as part of a ruling elite, or at least in tune with a ruling intelligentsia, and to preach at others, and to have the government or somebody else support them. It's a natural, lazy impulse in humankind, I'm afraid. And you just feel a whole lot better knowing that you don't have to lift a finger. But, of course, the problem is that leads to social destruction.
You mentioned that we're committing suicide here in America and our founding principles. Are we going to be able to get back to the Declaration of Independence and Constitution? And if we are, how?
Once we purge this millennial generation, which has been a toxic, horrifying thing, which, by the way, has on average 6 fewer IQ points than the generation before it. The generation after the millennials appears to be smarter, however, and appears to be much more inclined to be religious, to be moral, to be hardworking. So we just need to survive the millennials if we can.
The book, Money, Morality, and the Machine, very interesting perspectives. Lowell goes into the details, some of these things. Of course, then the future looks like Baltimore, another book. Lowell Ponte, writer for WorldNet Daily, among others. So good to be with you, my friend, and God bless you.